All right, so let's dive into a real courtroom drama today. City Capital versus Interco back in 1988. Just picture this, we've got this bidding war going on, the price keeps climbing higher and higher, but the company's board just keeps saying no. And meanwhile, you have the shareholders who are like, "Hey, let's cash in. What's going on here?"
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a pivotal moment in corporate law, this whole case, especially when we start talking about these, these intense takeover battles and how these poison pills get used.
So to set the scene a little bit, we need to go back to the 1980s. We're talking about Interco. They were this huge diversified holding company, like everything from furniture to shoes. And like a lot of companies at the time, they were facing this potential for takeovers, right?
Oh, yeah. The 80s were just wild for mergers and acquisitions. And Interco, they were a prime target. Their stock price wasn't exactly, amazing, and they had all these valuable assets. And those assets, well, they attracted some pretty hungry investors.
And that's where the Rales brothers come in, Stephen and Mitchell. They were known for making, some pretty smart investment moves. And they saw Interco. They're like, "Okay, there's an opportunity here." So they start buying up these shares, which sets the stage for this huge showdown with the company's board.
Oh, absolutely. And the tension just keeps ratcheting up as the Rales brothers, they're working through their company, City Capital Associates, and they just start throwing out these higher and higher bids for Interco. I mean, we're talking a significant jump, from $64 a share to 70, and then boom, all the way up to $74 a share.
Now, you would think at that point, shareholders would be thrilled, right? I mean, Interco's stock had been kind of stuck in the 40s before all this started. But the board, they had a different plan. They were really holding on to this restructuring plan, this idea that, hey, this is going to unlock even more value. Like they were aiming for $76 a share.
But here's the catch. Their restructuring meant they had to push aside that $94 all-cash offer from CCA. And a lot of shareholders were pretty happy with that offer.
So now we're in this legal battle, this tug of war. And the question becomes, could the board actually legally use this poison pill, which is like this defensive measure, to keep the company from being attractive for acquisition, and in doing so, prevent shareholders from taking what seemed like a pretty good deal?
And that brings us to the Unocal test. It comes from this landmark case, Unocal Corporation versus Mesa Petroleum, and basically this two-part test helps determine if a board's actions during a takeover are legal.
Okay, so break that down for us. What are these two parts? It sounds a bit like a legal riddle wrapped up in a corporate takeover.
Well, first, the court looks at whether the board really thought there was a threat to the company. It doesn't have to be an actual threat, but the board's got to have a good reason to think there is one. And second, the court looks at whether what they did to defend the company, in this case using the poison pill, was appropriate given the threat they saw.
So it's kind of like asking, did they overreact? Like using a sledgehammer to crack a walnut?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just one size fits all. You gotta apply this test to each step of the takeover fight. Like, as offers go up and the pressure mounts, the situation changes, and what might have been okay at the beginning could look totally different later on.
So let's take this Unocal test, this legal test, and apply it to City Capital versus Interco. What did the court think about the Rales brothers and their supposed threat? And was that poison pill actually justified, legally speaking?
Well, the court, they really looked closely at that $74 all-cash offer from CCA. And, they just didn't see it as some kind of like super aggressive, hostile takeover. It was a good offer, straight cash, no weird conditions. Like, imagine someone offering you a suitcase full of cash for your old car. Hard to say no, right?
Right. It's a pretty good deal. So the court was basically saying, hold on, where's the real danger here? Okay, so what are the poison pill then? Did the court agree with the board that it was a proportional response?
That's where the court kind of drew a line. They said, okay, maybe using a poison pill early on when the takeover was just starting to heat up, that might have been okay. But as things kept going, especially when that $74 offer came in, the poison pill seemed like it was only there to stop shareholders from making their own choice.
So it's like the board was saying, we know better than you, even if you don't get it yet. But the shareholders, they were ready to cash in, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Remember, the board, they were really pushing their restructuring plan, saying it would eventually be worth $76 a share. But the court wasn't buying it. They pointed out that Interco's stock, it had never even gotten close to $60 a share, so their valuation seemed, well, maybe a little too optimistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so the court wasn't convinced. They were basically saying, show me the proof, show me the real evidence that your big plans are actually going to work.
Right, and that's where the court's decision gets really interesting. They said, look, We're at this late stage now. It's clear the shareholders want to take this offer. You can't just keep using the poison pill to block them.
So that sets a pretty important legal precedent, right? It means boards can't just hide behind poison pills forever to shut down shareholder choice, especially when there's a decent offer on the table and nobody's being forced into anything.
Yeah, exactly. City Capital versus Interco, it established this really powerful precedent that limits how and when boards can use poison pills to basically control what happens to a company. It really highlighted that balance of power between boards and shareholders.
So how does all of this apply to today's world? This case happened back in 88.
Mm-hmm.
Does it still matter in the modern corporate world? I mean, think about it. This was before smartphones, before the internet as we know it today.
It's actually still incredibly relevant. See, this case set this major precedent that still has an impact today in boardrooms and courtrooms all over the place. It influences how companies react to those activist investors who are pushing for change, and it impacts how boards handle those big takeover battles.
So it's like a legal ripple effect, still shaping how things are done all these years later. Can you give us some specific examples of how City Capital versus Interco has changed how corporate governance works?
Well, for one thing, boards can't just assume that their idea of what the company is worth is the only one that matters. They need to have strong evidence to back up what they're saying, especially if they're going to reject an offer that shareholders are excited about.
So it's not enough to just say, trust us, we know what we're doing. They have to show their work, prove their decisions with something more than just a feeling.
Exactly. And they have to be ready to defend their choices in court, knowing that judges are going to look closely at those valuations and make sure they're based on something real. City Capital versus Interco really raised the bar for transparency and accountability.
This case probably made boards think more about communicating openly with shareholders. Right? Like explaining their reasoning, their strategy, and trying to get everyone on the same page before things turn into a huge legal mess.
Oh, for sure. It's become like a cautionary tale showing that ignoring how shareholders feel can really backfire. It's way better to talk to them, explain what you're doing, and address their concerns directly.
So it's not just about winning in court. It's about building trust and having a good relationship between the board and the people who own the company.
Exactly. And, you know, this case also showed how important it is to have good corporate governance practices in place from the very beginning. It showed that having clear procedures, good communication, and a well-defined process for handling takeovers can help avoid these kinds of conflicts in the first place.
So being proactive, building a strong foundation that can handle those high-pressure situations,
yeah,
like having a fire drill before the fire actually starts.
Right. And on a more practical level, this case has also affected how companies design their poison pills. Nowadays, they often have specific triggers built in, so they have to be redeemed or reconsidered if certain things happen.
So it's like adding safety valves, right? Making sure the poison pill can't be misused or become a way for people to hold on to power.
Exactly. Like if a certain percentage of shareholders say they want to accept an offer, the poison pill might automatically go away. That way, the board can't just keep using it to block a deal that most of the shareholders want.
So even though this case was about a very specific situation, the principles it established have had a lasting impact on the whole corporate world.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental case in corporate law, and its influence is still felt today in boardrooms, law firms, and business schools all over. It shows how powerful a well-thought-out legal decision can be in shaping the way we do business.
It reminds us that legal precedents aren't just sitting on a shelf somewhere. They have a real effect on how companies work and make decisions.
And it also highlights how important it is to understand those precedents, because they can have real consequences for your investments, your career, and how you navigate the world of business.
So for any aspiring lawyers or experienced legal professionals listening, this case is definitely one to remember.
Absolutely. It's essential reading for anyone interested in corporate law, mergers and acquisitions, or that tricky balance of power between boards and shareholders.
We've spent a lot of time on the legal ins and outs and the impact of City Capital versus Interco. But, you know, it's easy to get caught up in all those details. At the end of the day, weren't there real people at the center of this whole thing? You know, people making tough choices that had real consequences?
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't just about legal arguments. It was about different visions for the future of the company. You had the Rails brothers, these driven investors who saw a way to unlock value. And then you had the board. They felt this responsibility to protect the company, to guide it in a specific direction.
I bet those board members felt a ton of pressure. You know, shareholders are pushing for a quick payout, but they truly believed that restructuring plan was the right way to go, even if it took a little longer to see the results. It must have been a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it's a classic dilemma, right? How do you balance what's good for shareholders right now with the possibility of growth and stability over the long term? And in the end, the court said the board went too far in using the poison pill to overrule what the shareholders wanted.
But does that mean the board was being dishonest? Were they just trying to protect themselves?
Well, not necessarily. I think it's possible they really thought they were doing what was best for the company as a whole. They had their vision, their strategy, and they felt strongly about sticking to it, even with all that pressure from shareholders and the threat of a takeover.
It just goes to show that even the corporate world, where everything seems to be about numbers and contracts, human judgment and even gut feelings still play a huge role in how decisions get made.
For sure. And those judgments aren't always perfect. People make mistakes. And sometimes even the best intentions can lead to unintended consequences. And this is where City Capital versus Interco leaves us with some really interesting questions to think about.
Like what kind of questions?
Well, how can boards find that balance between making sure shareholders get the most value and making decisions that are good for the long-term health of the company? And how can shareholders make their voices heard without taking away the board's authority to, you know, lead the company? These are questions people are still debating today.
So City Capital versus Interco gave us some important guidelines, but it didn't exactly give us a simple answer to these bigger questions.
Nope, it's just one piece of a much bigger story about how corporations and the people who own them interact. And that story is still unfolding, with new cases, new rules, and new challenges popping up all the time.
Well, as we wrap up our deep dive into this fascinating case, I want to leave you with something to think about. In today's world, with activist investors being more assertive than ever and companies feeling constant pressure to deliver results right away, how can we make sure that boards have the space and the freedom to make those tough, long-term decisions? You know, the kind of decisions that might not be popular in the short term, but ultimately benefit the company and everyone involved down the road. It's a complex issue without easy answers, but it's definitely a conversation worth having. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.